The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
I now have the privilege of speaking with someone from the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF. As we call it, David Kortman is a senior counsel with ADF. David, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Should we talk about the Supreme Court rulings or two of them recently? Because religious liberty doesn't seem to have been upheld in the way that I had hoped. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see, to catch up everybody. The court ruled recently about Title VII. Title VII is basically workplace protections that have been in place since 1964. And they were originally meant, ironically, to protect women in the workplace to make sure they weren't discriminated against. And the court issued a ruling within the last week that basically said the original meaning of sex in 1964, which was biologically men and women, now also includes sexual orientation and gender identity. So it's kind of thrown things in a little bit of chaos.
That sounds like looniness to me. On what basis could they have possibly done that? And of course, was it Roberts who sided with that majority?
It was actually Justice Gorsuch and the Chief Justice Roberts.
How is it possible that Gorsuch could get something like that wrong? I'm absolutely lost.
It was interesting because, you know, a lot of people have heard of originalism or if you're a textualist, in other words, you're reading actually what the law says, and then you determine at that time not only what did Congress mean, but what did those words mean to the public. And interestingly enough, it's cited as saying they were being textualist, and even though it didn't mean sex orientation or gender identity in 1964, today if you're looking at that, you have to take into account someone's sex to decide if it's an issue of sex orientation or transgender identity, which of course we think was the mistake in the case.
Since when does Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor care about originalism? In other words, I'm a little lost on how, unless it's sophistry on their part, but do you mean to tell me that Gorsuch and Roberts both genuinely believed that's what it says now?
Well, that's certainly what they said. And what's interesting about that, I think it was a brilliant strategy from those on the left. So it's kind of rather than continue to fight them, join them. And Justice Scalia was so persuasive and had such a great influence on the court and people's thinking, where he was the champion of being a textualist. And so the other side basically started making the argument, hey, this is a textualist reading, and you should be able to say that to decide someone's transgender status or sexual orientation, you have to look at their sex. So it is a textualist approach. And that's what the Chief and Justice Gorsuch decided.
What does that have to do with sexual preferences then?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, obviously, we think it's the wrong conclusion. But they basically said to make the decision, you necessarily have to look at someone's sex. And our argument is no, it doesn't matter what their sex is. You don't even have to know what their sex is if you're looking at sexual orientation or transgender status. So that's where the distinction came.
Well, so what does this mean? In other words, the reason I'm such a strong proponent of ADF and religious liberty and getting originalists on our courts is that we don't want to be legislating from the bench. We've had a lot of that. That's what this seems like to me. In other words, what's the kind of a case that can come up? I mean, the funeral home case that we've talked about on this program where a guy goes on leave. He works at a funeral home. He comes back and says, now I'm a woman and I'm going to dress as a woman. They said, no, this is a very sensitive business and we're dealing with clients that are in tremendous grief. We don't think this is appropriate. Now that person has been justified and will keep his job, although he would probably want me to say her job, at this funeral home. I mean, that's the case that was basically adjudicated, was it not?
It was one of the three cases, yes. And what was interesting about it is that we actually argued on behalf of the funeral home that the person's transgender status didn't matter. It was coming to work and saying, now, even though you were hired as a man and you agreed to this dress code policy where men wore black suits and women wore black dresses, that no longer would you comply with that. And you wanted to come to work to dress as a woman, be able to use the women's restrooms. And the court said, well, interestingly enough, we're not going to rule on those issues, the dress code or the restroom, when those really were the issues in question in the case.
I just feel like, you know, the basics of freedom are that I can hire and fire whom I like for almost whatever reason. If somebody comes to work in my funeral home and then at some point they show up after a crazy weekend with a skull tattoo on their face, it seems to me that I can say that's not appropriate and you can't work here anymore. How is this different from something like that?
Yeah, and what the court would say is, there are certain protected statuses, and we've decided that now transgender status and sex orientation status fits in sex from the 1960s. And so that's how you get to that result.
And what is the other case that was recently ruled on by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, and the other case was where there was two different cases, and one out of New York and one out of Georgia. But basically those where one was worked for a county down in Georgia, one was a flight instructor, and the plaintiffs argued in that case, well, the employers found out that they were gay and then fired them because of it. And the court said, well, your status as being gay is not sufficient. It violates Title VII and these protections to fire you because of it. There were also, though, underlying disputes, though. In one of them, there was some inappropriate handling of money that was accused. And so there were different issues wrapped up in it. But the court basically cut all that away and said that you can't fire someone under Title VII for their status as being gay or transgender.
For their status. But I thought you were saying that they weren't fired for that. They were fired for another reason.
Well, that was the dispute in the case, and apparently the court landed on the side of accepting the plaintiff's version of the facts the way that they were brought.
That they were fired? Do we have any reason to believe that there was animus on the side of the employer toward gays?
There was none I was aware of. In our case, there was none at all. In fact, what was interesting in the funeral home case, we specifically pled, and our client said, look, we don't have a problem with him being transgender. It's violating the dress code policy and the restroom facilities as he comes to work.
Okay, this is nuts. Folks, we're talking to David Quirtman, senior counsel with ADF, that's the Alliance Defending Freedom. I want to give you their website. It's adflegal.org, adflegal.org. David, you all at ADF, you're just one of a handful of organizations that are fighting for religious liberty in our courts, very, very rarely lose any cases. So this must have been very disappointing.
It really was disappointing. And we thought the case going in, regardless of what your feelings are about these issues of sex orientation or transgender status, wherever you land on that, we thought the case was pretty straightforward because the question in the case was not how you feel about those things, but whether in 1964, when sex was added to the non-discrimination laws in the workplace meant to protect women so they wouldn't be discriminated against from men, did that mean in 1964 sex orientation or transgender status? And the answer was clearly no, and yet that still somehow wasn't the ruling that resulted. So it was a disappointment.
Well, I just want to go back to the Constitution itself, since we're talking about originalism. It strikes me as odd that we have laws in America that protect anyone from anything along these lines. In other words, it seems to me that an employer should have the right to fire someone for almost any reason. In other words, even if I disagree with the employer, even if I say the employer is wrong and is a bigot or is anything, when did we turn that corner where the government says to an employer that they're not able to fire someone. It strikes me as a curious legal precedent.
Yeah, there are, you know, there's always been debates about that, you know, how free should the free market be? You know, supply and demand, customers decide, those type of things. But there's times both when the court and when legislatures at all different level, whether it's Congress or lower, say, well, here's a specific class of people we think has been discriminated against to such a point where we want to make sure their status is protected. And so what happens is that list tends to grow at the local level. It's much larger, all types of categories. Washington, D.C., your political beliefs are actually a protected category, which you can imagine is an interesting debate in a lot of circles. And so that's the way those things develop in the law.
Your political beliefs. I would think that, you know, being conservative or in the times in which we live now, being a Trump supporter would be a reason that many people would get fired. You're saying that that is protected, that if I were a vocal Trump supporter in the District of Columbia, that I could have my job protected from someone who doesn't like the president?
Yeah, that's right. That's the way it is in Washington, D.C. And what's interesting about that deciding, you know, what counts as political beliefs these days, it seems to be almost anything because everything is certainly up for grabs. So, yeah, that's the way it is.
Well, it does seem crazy. It's just fascinating to me as we think this through. You know, we know what we like and what we don't like. But then the question is, what is right? And that's, to me, what the Constitution is for, to bring us back to the basics of, you know, the level playing field, so to speak. Even if you don't get the kind of outcome you like, how can we all play by the same rules? And it seems to me that with rulings like this, we're changing that. This is outcome based. And it does seem like even people like Gorsuch and Roberts are legislating from the bench, which I find to be horrific. I have to say, I hope this president is reelected and gets to appoint some or nominate some true originalists to the court. We're out of time. David Cortman, thank you. Folks, I'd like you to go to adflegal.org, adflegal.org. Check out the Alliance Defending Freedom. They're heroes. David, thank you.
All right. Thanks to be on.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Your freedom is under attack. But if you act now, you can protect not only your family, but generations to come. Go to ChristianOutlook.com and to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure that the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's ChristianOutlook.com. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.